This week, in episode 265 of the RV Podcast, we talk about the amazing popularity of e-bikes for RVers.
For someone that's in the RV community, they're really just an amazing tool because you don't have to rely on a tow car. You don't have to bring a tow car at all if you don't want to.
Welcome, fellow travelers. It's time for another episode of the RV Podcast.
Answering your questions, sharing tips, suggesting great trips and off-the-beaten-path adventures, and always staying on top of the RV lifestyle news you need to know about with great interviews and inside industry information.
Here's your hosts, award-winning journalists Mike and Jennifer Wendland.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the RV Podcast, your guide to freedom and fun in RV travel. No matter what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this show is for you because on this podcast, we talk about getting out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance the RV lifestyle. So welcome. We are very honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, this week on the podcast, we're going to learn about the booming popularity among RVers of electric bikes. And our special guest is going to be Ty Collins. He's the marketing director of Rad Power Bikes. Now, regular listeners know that Rad Power Bikes has been a loyal sponsor of this podcast for years now, but my interview with Ty is not going to be meant as a commercial at all. I ask him to come on the show to answer the many questions I get week after week from RVers about electric bikes. So if you've been curious about an electric bike, stick around. Ty's going to be come up soon in our interview of the week segment. And we have lots more for you this week, including a whole bunch of RV news, a great listener question, and an off-the-beaten-path report from our friends the Burkitts. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic.
How could you not? It's almost 80 degrees and the humidity is low. You can tell we're not in the north. We're down in Florida. Yeah.
And it's been another busy week of RV traveling for us. And friends have joked that the day after we had the first frost of fall, that we were headed to warmer climates. And that's true.
Yes, it is. We are now on Okaloosa Island, on the part of the Florida panhandle they call the Emerald Coast. And we're going to stay here pretty much through Thanksgiving. Driving a few hours for the next few Fridays to Southwest Georgia, where our grandson Matthew is a senior playing his last year of high school football. And then we got some book research to do. We're working on a couple more of our, we have five out now. We're looking to put a couple more of our 7-day adventure guides out. And we're going to do the next two are going to be on Florida. One's going to be on the Gulf Coast, which is where we are now, and the other will be on the Atlantic side, on the east coast of Florida. So we'll be doing lots of traveling. That's one of the reasons we love this this condo down here that we have, because it gives us a great base to travel all around the beautiful southern states and the Gulf Coast.
But though we surely love it down here, October and early November are just fabulous months for the weather down here in this part of Florida. We're going to be heading back to Michigan for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yep. And then, right after Christmas and New Year's, is our annual winter camp out in the snow up at Tequamanon Falls in Michigan. We hope there's the normal 2.5 feet of snow that we usually see up there every year about that time. The dates for this gathering, January 10th through the 12th of 2020, and I will put a link in the show notes if you want some information on how to go through the little special Facebook group that we have set up for this winter campout. This is the sixth or seventh year in a row we've done this. And we haven't done a lot of announcement, but I think we've already almost sold it out. When I say sold it out, we're not selling it. It's the Department of Natural Resources from Michigan that are doing the booking, but the campground's almost sold out, and that's because of our group. We got about 50 people so far coming.
Well, that's exciting. Can't wait.
Yep. Now, you have to join this Facebook group to read all the details. That I'm going to put a link in the show notes for this episode. And you find the show notes at rvlifestyle.com/265. That's rvlifestyle.com/265. But if you have never camped in the winter and you want to try it out, just request to join that group and you can learn about it and how you can be a part of it and join us up there playing in the snow. It's weird to talk about snow now because we're looking out our window here at palm trees and blue skies and green grass, and it's still shorts weather down here.
Well, Bo and I are looking forward to that snow.
Yeah, Bo, I don't think Bo minds it as much as this because the humidity isn't so bad down here. So it's great. We'll spend, like we said, till Thanksgiving here, and then we'll go back for some family time in Michigan, and then our camp out, and then we start the, we got the Tampa RV show in January, and then we're back here, and we've got a couple speaking arrangements that we're doing, and it's going to be a busy year of travel again next year. I added up the other day, and it was almost every week we were traveling someplace this past year so far.
Well, it was fun.
It has been fun. And it's been like that for, this will be 8 years in March that we've been doing this. All right. Hey, this part of the podcast is brought to you by Dish Outdoors that lets the RVer take satellite TV with them and pay month by month. That means there's no long-term contracts involved with Dish Outdoors. You can pay by the month. And we just got a brand new HD satellite receiver called Wally for our RV. And it's a very small, compact, easy to set up receiver. It lets you do all sorts of really neat things through the Dish network. Wirelessly connects to your favorite apps like Netflix. And it works with the Dish Playmaker, very small portable satellite antenna. In fact, I mounted mine up on the roof of our Class C RV. You don't have to do that. You can put it outside your campsite and bring it in and back and forth if you want. We just felt it was easier to put it up on the roof and we don't have to take it out or take it back in at the end of a campout. The whole system sells for like $348, but because you are a listener of the RV podcast, the folks at Dish Outdoors have given us a special coupon code that will give you $50 off that price. So if you use the coupon code RV Lifestyle at checkout, you'll get those $50 off. Whole bundle will end up costing you just $298 after our discount. It's an amazing price. You should check it out. If you've ever thought about having satellite TV, we really have liked it. We used it coming down here to Florida, and we were in Georgia, and there was some bad weather, and it was so nice to be able to tune on. We got the Weather Channel, and it was just great from our spot in the middle of pretty much nowhere in Georgia, and we were able to watch it. But anyway, just go to rvlifestyle.com/dish. That's rvlifestyle.com/dish.
News. Mike's got news. RV news. Travel news. Inside information and trends that shape the RV lifestyle. Here's the RV news of the week.
Yellowstone National Park is one of Mike's and my favorite American national parks. It is just such a unique place. So I read with interest the story that ran yesterday on the federal judge who works there. The judge handles all those crazy cases we read about from time to time, like people trying to pet elks, walk on geysers, harass the bison, you know, that sort of thing. And the judge also handles the more mundane things like drunk driving, domestic violence, and other issues that come up. So if you're a person like us who is fascinated by everything Yellowstone, the story is well worth the read, and we'll put a link in our show notes so that you can read that article.
Yeah, and the show notes are rvlifestyle.com/265. Hey, we've all heard of haunted houses and haunted corn mazes this time of year, but have you ever heard of a haunted campground? Outside Magazine had an article on haunted campgrounds just in time for Halloween. The story highlighted several campgrounds throughout the country that some of them are really considered haunted. Some of the places offer nighttime tours in late October. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But Halloween camping has become really popular. So, in fact, most campgrounds now have Halloween weekends every weekend in October, and they actually sell out for months in advance. So if you can get to a campground this weekend, next weekend, go check it out because they are really fun. We always make a visit to a campground around Halloween time because everybody decorates the RVs and then the kids go trick-or-treating and it's just a real fun thing. So it's become a real big month for campgrounds, Halloween.
As word spreads of a proposal we shared with you last week to privatize campgrounds in some American national parks, so did opposition to the idea. An advisory committee recommended last week that American national parks turn to private companies to modernize the nation's campgrounds by adding Wi-Fi, food trucks, limits to senior discounts, more rentals, and other things like that. But opposition to these ideas is also rising as various groups express concern, saying they like getting away from modern life, enjoy the rustic feel, and are worried some would be priced out if all these updates happen to the privatized campgrounds. This is a story we surely will continue to be hearing more about in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and we'd like to hear what you think about it. There's no doubt if you've camped at any of our national parks, you know that those campgrounds are pretty much all in really bad shape. So they're trying to figure out a way to do it. Would you do us a favor, though, and weigh in on that? We'd love to get your opinion on it, and we can share it on the podcast. Just call our special voicemail number. We have a 586-372-6990. That's 586-372-6990.
You know, I think it kind of is like people. Some people want to get away. They want quiet. They don't want any part of TV. And other people want to put a big TV on the side of their camper and invite the bison to elk to watch TV with them.
Yeah. It's a very hot button issue. And I think there's just so much distrust of anything politicians suggest that there's a real visceral reaction to the idea of privatizing campgrounds. So we've done that already in most of them. There's concessionaires that are there. And so it's a tough issue. We certainly need something to get those campgrounds and really the whole infrastructure of all our national parks improved. So I'd be interested to hear what our listeners have to say. So
I would be too.
Yep. Call us 586-372-6990. Weigh in with your opinion. We'd love to share it with our audience. Ever let your dog go off leash and then maybe do a little bit of running on a camping trip? It's not always a good idea. And a woman in the news last week would testify to that. She went camping in northern Michigan and she let her five dogs. That's a lot of dogs to travel.
I wonder how large they were.
I don't know. She let her five dogs off leash at her camping spot. And when she came back home, she must've been with them, but they must've kind of roamed out of her sight. She noticed a strange bite pattern on one of her dog's neck. She took the pet to a vet, and the vet told her that the marks appeared to be those of a bobcat. The story's worth checking out, and it's a good reminder of how our pets can be at risk in ways we may not even consider. Again, a link in the News of the Week section on the podcast, rvlifestyle.com/265. One more story.
Human noise is getting harder and harder to escape, even in the national parks, according to new reports. In a fascinating story out last week, researchers discuss sound recordings they are making at the national parks and how prevalent human noise is, even in the most remote locations. They are analyzing the recordings to discover how often sounds generated by humans can be heard. The idea of reducing your sound footprint is something we've heard about before, and the story touches on the impact human noises make on our environment, something most of us don't even consider.
I remember that one time we were at Denali National Park in Alaska, and I couldn't put my finger, I knew how big the park was, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was that was so appealing to me about that park, and I think it was just that. It was the total absence of noise. I remember I went out, I drove to as far as I'd let you drive, and then I took a little hike for, 15, 20 minutes into the forest, and I just sat down, and it was absolutely peacefully quiet. There was a little bit of wind in the trees, but no other noise. And then after about a half hour, I heard an airplane.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't get away from
planes. Yeah, I don't know where it was, but it really disturbed the whole atmosphere of the park. Remember after 9/11 when the planes weren't flying?
Oh, that was, it was so quiet. And then when I heard a plane, I'm like, whoa, what's that?
Yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting study. And again, there'll be a link to that in the news of the week segment on the show notes for the podcast, which are at rvlifestyle.com/265. This part of the podcast brought to you by Rad Power Bikes. Now, you'll hear from the marketing director of Rad Power Bikes in our interview of the week segment coming up, but that's not the commercial. This is the commercial. Rad Power Bikes is an electric bike manufacturer. They offer direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes, now with free shipping. We, Jennifer and I both have Rad Power Bikes. We've had them for almost 2 years now, and we love them. Every time we've ever let anybody ride off on them, they just come back and say how much fun they are. They sell themselves. If I was a Rad Power Bike salesperson, I just would put those out everywhere and say, hey, try it, and people would want it. They're really fun. Every model can reach about 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. They give you the choice to ride pedal-free with throttle using five different levels of pedal assist. It's perfect for those who want to get back into riding or maybe you're recovering from surgery. Rad Power Bikes can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. Depends on, you know, what the terrain is. If you're going all uphill, you're not going to get quite as far. They're priced at less than half the cost of comparable bikes on the market because they deal directly with the consumer. There's no dealer retail markup chain involved there. Now, here's a better deal. Besides free shipping, you will get $75 off if you use the coupon code RVLifestyle at checkout. So when you check out, use the coupon code RVLifestyle and you'll get an additional $75 off. Just go check out all the different models they have, every possible kind you'd want. Check them out at radpowerbikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. My name is Sarah Labasse, and I am from California. And I do have a question for you, and it might be a little loaded. Just anything you'd like to answer about it would be great. So my husband came to me about 5 months ago and said, what would you think if we rented our house and we took a year, we took all four of our kids, bought a fifth wheel in a truck and toured the U.S. And I said, okay. So I've been doing a lot of research, listening to a lot of podcasts, specifically yours, Facebook groups, YouTube channels, just really trying to understand what this means. I wanted to know if you guys have any special advice for us with traveling the U.S. with four children. We are going to be hitting about 31 national parks, a lot of the major cities. My children are ages 15, 13, 9, and 5, so they will be 16, 14, 10, and 6 when we go. It's a little crazy, I know. But we are super excited, and I just want to make sure I have all my grounds covered. So if there's anything you can give me advice on, I would be so appreciative. Thank you. Bye.
Well, the best advice I can give you is do it. Do it. This is awesome. What an opportunity for your kids and for you and your husband.
And if your kids are willing, your 13, or your, I'm thinking the 15-year-old might have more things that's harder to give up, but it would be, they would be getting so much more by traveling all over and seeing everything they're going to see and doing their homework about what they're seeing. And I presume you're going to be homeschooling.
There's a number of different places, and you're doing everything right, Sarah. You're searching it. I want to recommend our friends Mark and Trish, who have Keep Your Daydream. That's their YouTube channel. Look it up, Keep Your Daydream. They travel now in a big fifth wheel. They've got a couple of teenage boys, and they had their daughter, who's now in college, that travel with them. And you can kind of get a glimpse at how they've been doing it as they travel across the country. Keep Your Daydream, that's like one of my favorite channels, and just big fans of Mark and Trish. So check their channel out. The other thing is, you know, make sure you're part of our Facebook group, the RV Lifestyle Facebook group. And if you just go to rvlifestyle.com/Facebook, you can join that group. We've got well over 25,000 very active members in that group, and they will answer any questions you have. And even if you just lurk or read, you'll learn a lot. But here's the best advice I think I can give you, and that is to join an RV club. Now, there are a lot of them out there. There's the FMCA. That's a great group. That's all geared towards families now. There is R Village, which is kind of a group and a kind of an online community that is connected at campgrounds. And those are both great groups. But the one I want to recommend specifically for you, because it really fits your lifestyle that you're going to have with traveling with kids as a young family, and that's the Escapees RV Club. And I'll put a link in the show notes. It's the Escapees RV Club. That group is absolutely perfect for you. It's made up of a lot of full-time RV families. It will help you at least answer or handle everything you might need, like what are you going to do about getting mail on the road, getting in touch with other RVers who maybe are road schooling, their kids. They call it homeschooling when you're sitting in a home, but when you're in the RV, it's called road schooling. And there's a big community there that you can connect with and will help you with all the hurdles that you have with that. They'll help you find ways to, if you have to, supplement your income a little bit while you're on the road. But I think the most important thing is it'll connect you with a group of instant friends and other young families who have been doing just what you are about to do and can help you as you transition into that life. So I will put a link on the show notes for you, Sarah, at on the RV Lifestyle page, rvlifestyle.com/265.
And I think it's going to work for you because I can hear the excitement in your voice. And obviously your husband wants to do this. And I think that'll rub off on the kids. And Escapees is just what you need, people to support you through this and help you figure it out. And I think it's the kind of opportunity that you'll look back upon your whole life and you're going to be glad that you did it.
Oh, you will. You will. We did an interview a few minutes back on the RV podcast with Travis and Melanie Carr. They're the leaders of the Escapees group. And if you haven't listened to that, I'll throw a link of that in the show notes as well. Go back and listen to that. It was one of our podcast episodes from earlier this summer. And you can hear that on the, find that in the show notes too. But RV clubs like Escapees, they just serve as this network of like-minded folks for you, and you can find support and encouragement and adventure and fun, friends for your kids, which is a big part when you're on the road. And usually there's most of the clubs have a bunch of special perks and discounts for its members as well. So I think you're going to have an absolute ball.
And I'm familiar with people who are teachers, and they would spend 3 months in the summer traveling with their kids. They go everywhere and explain everything and show them everything. And so I'm familiar with the 3 months, so why not take a year?
Yep, do it. Well, Sarah, let us know as you are preparing how it goes. Send us a picture. I'd love to see a picture of you and your family and as you pick your RV. There's just so many little decisions that seem so overwhelming now, but just take them one by one. But you're off on the right path by learning all you can.
Hey, fellow travelers. Want to have your voice featured on the RV podcast?
Send us your questions or comments. Send an audio file to mike@rvlifestyle.com. Or better yet, use our RV podcast voicemail number, 586-372-6990. 586-372-6990.
We want to hear from you. Call 586-372-6990.
This part of the podcast is brought to you by Battle Born Batteries, makers of quality, safe, and reliable lithium batteries that can be installed in just about every type of RV. Best thing to do is to have you get in touch with Battle Born and find out what lithium batteries and an upgraded energy management system can add to your RV lifestyle. I mean, lithium batteries just make so much sense. They let you really sustain your adventure out there off the grid, boondocking with batteries. That lithium batteries just offer much better performance. They charge faster. They charge fuller. They're much longer lasting. They're maintenance free. And they can be pretty much dropped in whatever kind of an RV you have. Class A, Class C, Class B van, travel trailer, a cab over camper, fifth wheel. Battleborn's folks are experts in those kind of RVs. All their batteries give you a 10-year guarantee. They can match your lithium power system with the right cabling, inverter, charger, solar controller. They can help you connect with whoever you need to help install all of that stuff. Jennifer and I have Battleborn in our RV. We rely on Battleborn batteries for our boondocking adventures, and If you want to learn more, just go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium and talk to Battleborn experts there. You can go to them. Our link will take you right there. rvlifestyle.com/lithium. And be sure and tell them that you heard about them on the RV podcast. Again, that is rvlifestyle.com/lithium. All right, time now for the interview of the week. And we're going to talk in this week's interview section about e-bikes. We get more questions about e-bikes, and pretty much everywhere we go, we hear people talking to us about e-bikes. I guess that's because they're just so darn much fun, right?
We're seeing more and more e-bikes.
Yeah. We've had ours for almost 2 years now. And when we first started, we didn't see any. And now pretty much every time we're in a campground, we see them. If we're meeting people at a RV show, as we do throughout the year, people are now telling us, hey, we got bikes. So what is an electric bike? Now, our guest is going to be a friend of ours named Ty Collins. Ty is the marketing director for Rad Power Bikes, but this is not meant as a commercial, and we're talking pretty much about electric bikes of all kinds. You can get whatever kind you want, but I asked Ty to come on because I know Ty well, and their bikes are made in the USA. They're from Seattle, and it's been fun to watch the company grow as they've been our sponsor. I think they now have 165 employees, Ty was telling me, and they only had like four, five, or six when they started as a sponsor of this podcast. So we appreciate their support, but we also love their bikes, and we both have one. And I thought it would be great to answer the questions from an expert rather than us giving you our opinions. So consider this a guide to what you need as an RVer to get an e-bike. Is an e-bike right for you? Our guest, Ty Collins, the marketing director of Rad Power Bikes. Well, Ty Collins, thank you, first of all, so much for being with us on the podcast. We're delighted to have you with us, as we've been talking about Rad Power Bikes for years now. It's the first time I think we've had you on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Mike, and first off, thank you so much for having us. Any excuse to talk electric bikes, we'll gladly take it.
Now, let's talk about them, because as we notice every week, we are seeing e-bikes, electric bikes, more and more as we travel across North America. So let's sort of start as a primer. I know a lot of our audience is either considering it or wondering now, after seeing them, if this is really what they need. So maybe you can help answer some of the more common questions. So let's start with just that question. Why are electric bikes so popular today, and what do we need to know about them in terms of motors and how they work?
Definitely. Well, a big question, but I think we can kind of boil down some of the key points. So, you know, why are e-bikes so popular today? I think now more than ever in the U.S., people are really becoming familiar and aware of electric bikes and all the benefits that they have. You know, when we started up, you know, a handful of years back, when most people heard electric bike, they didn't really understand the concept. And most people thought, well, why would I need a motor? It's a bicycle. Bicycles are for exercise. And while you can use a bike for exercise, we really view electric bikes as just an awesome form of personal transportation. And on that form of transportation, you can get as much or as little exercise as you want. So the vast majority of us spend a lot of time in the car in very, very short trips. And e-bikes are amazing because they can really replace a lot of those trips that you would take in a car on a bike. Now, for someone that's in the RV community, they're really just an amazing tool because, number one, you don't have to rely on a tow car. You don't have to bring a tow car at all if you don't want to. And especially some of our more compact folding models, you can actually just put them in a lot of the, cargo bays or cargo areas of your RV, trailer, fifth wheel, what have you. So kind of some of the big things to know about electric bikes, at their core, they really are just a bicycle. They're going to pedal the same. You're going to apply the brakes the same way. You're going to shift the same way, but you're going to have the added benefit of the motor, which is going to be powered by your battery pack. So you can really get as much assistance or as little assistance as you want. So if you really just need a little help on the big hills, but you want to ride like a normal bike the rest of the time, you can do that. If you want to pretty much treat it like a moped or a scooter and just do throttle, you can do that as well. So their popularity is really, really increasing because people are realizing what, you know, a versatile form of transportation these really are, and you know, you can really make it fit your lifestyle.
Now, I think we're talking about transportation here, but if I had to list the number one benefit of our e-bikes, it would be fun. They are just much fun. And when we give people rides, they see us with ours in campgrounds, and we always let them take them out for a ride. Although one guy ran into a tree once with it, but that was his problem. He wasn't looking where he was going. And then he convinced me he never knew how to ride a bike ever. So, yep. But he ended up, I think, buying one. But fun is the most important thing. And the first thing I hear with everybody is, this is so much fun. But there are two elements that you mentioned. Let's kind of talk about this. One, the motor, and one, the batteries. What do we need to know about the motors? Is there a certain power setting that we should look for? Is there any legal restrictions on size of motor? What does the consumer need to know?
So in the U.S., the federal regulations limit electric bikes that are street legal to 750 watts, which is going to be about 1 horsepower. So to legally ride an electric bike on streets, bike paths, bike lanes, things like that, it's going to have a max wattage of 750 watts. So typically power comes in 250 watt increments. So more commonly you'll find 250 watt, 500 watt, or 750 watt. All of those are going to be street legal. You can take them where you can take a regular bicycle, you know, a regular pedal bicycle, obviously, but the higher the wattage, the more power you're going to get, the more quickly you'll accelerate, and the easier time you're going to have going up hills.
So you would really want to look for, I think, 750 if you can, and that way you're sure you're going to be able to handle everything.
Exactly. So the benefit of a 750 watt motor is you're going to have the most, essentially the most power you can get while maintaining kind of that street legal electric bike classification. If you're going to have power over that, it's going to kind of go into a new category where it's going to be considered a moped, essentially, and you'll need license, registration, insurance, and things like that. But at 750 watts, you can treat it just like a regular bicycle, which makes it just a lot easier.
Now, I noticed that just recently, the National Park Service has authorized the use of e-bikes in their system. There are still some places, though, where we do see signs that prohibit electric bikes. How do people get away with that if they're street legal and have the same category as a bicycle?
Yeah, so where it does get a little bit tricky is the laws around electric bikes are still kind of getting worked out. Really, you know, they can differ on a federal, state, county, and even city level. So the announcement that electric bikes are going to be legalized in the national park system is a really amazing step towards what we're hoping is a more streamlined and kind of easier to follow laws around electric bikes. So there will still be some areas that will kind of, you know, choose to put their own, you know, rules and interpretation and spin on the laws, but for the most part, as long as you are 750 watts or less, and there's no specific call out about not being able to ride electric bikes, you're typically going to be safe. You know, I say typically because areas can differ, but it's becoming, you know, so much easier to ride electric bikes than it used to be.
And as they're more popular and as e-bike fans increase across North America, most municipalities are realizing that these are here to stay, and I think that'll change. But let's go down to the batteries, because those motors are powered by a battery. And I guess as a electric bike rider myself, the first thing Jennifer and I noticed is It is basically silent. You really don't hear the motor. It's not like a motorcycle or even a scooter. It's very, very quiet. Is there anything we should know about the noise? And then we'll get into the battery usage.
Yeah, so just like you said, it's pretty much going to be silent. You know, it's not like the two or four stroke motors that people are used to on motorcycles and scooters at all. You're really just going to kind of hear a small winding noise from the motor. And because you're traveling at often a higher average speed than a traditional bike, you might hear a little more noise from the tires on the pavement than you're normally used to. But other than that, it's going to be very, very quiet. You know, there are a number of different types of motors you can find on electric bikes. So on the bikes that we produce here at Rad Power Bikes, all of our motors are going to be mounted in the rear hub of the wheel. We chose to use that style of motor because it's going to give you a very, very natural riding experience. The power is still going to be generated from the rear wheel. It's a nice balance. It's a very smooth ride. Of those two types of motors we have, one is known as what's called an internally geared motor. So it's actually going to have a gear system within it. And the other one is going to be a direct drive motor, which is basically powered by a series of magnets. A direct drive motor is going to be the style of motor that's featured on about half of our bikes. In fact, the bikes that you have, Mike, are both going to feature a direct drive motor. So that's going to be kind of the quietest option out of all of the different electric bike motor styles you're going to find. Basically, it's a series of magnets that power the bike. There's basically just one single moving part. And because of that, it's going to be a very, very quiet riding experience, which really just makes the ride that much better.
Oh, you don't even know it's running. You don't even hear it. It's neat. Yep. All right, back to the batteries. You do have to charge these. How far can you go on a battery, or how long does a battery charge last? How long does it take to typically charge the battery?
Yeah, all great questions. So typically a completely dead battery is going to take about 4 or so hours to charge. So not too long at all. And once fully charged, we give a pretty real world estimation of between 25 and 45 miles per charge. So the main things that are going to influence that are your level of assist. So are you just getting a little gentle level of assistance, or is the motor doing the vast majority of the work for you? What's the size of the rider? Obviously, a 100-pound rider versus a 250-pound rider are going to use a different level of juice. And then a big one is the level of terrain. You know, are you kind of cruising on a flat paved surface, or are you going up and down some, you know, pretty serious hills? Obviously, the more hills, you know, the more power it's going to use. I myself, the way I ride, which is around the city of Seattle, which definitely has its fair share of hills, I typically am getting around 40 miles per charge in my kind of just common everyday usage. So it's quite a bit longer than it seems. You know, you can really cover some major ground on a single charge.
Now, unlike an electric car, for example, you don't need any specific plug. You just need, I've always said a 30-amp supply, because that's what we have in our RV. But I actually just plug mine into an outside 30-amp supply on my RV or at the pedestal, and they charge up real quick there. I've even charged them off my batteries, my batteries on the RV. So they're easy. You just basically plug them in, and you can find any place to do it. Am I missing anything any secrets?
No. It's going to be pretty standard, just like the charger you would find for, say, you know, a laptop or something like that. So, you know, if you're charging a laptop, if you're charging a cell phone, you'll be set.
And you do have a gauge there that roughly lets you know how much power you have. So it's very easy. I've never run out, and we've gone, you know, 40, 50 miles a day on sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I've never run
out.
Yeah,
so pretty much just like you're going to find in a car with your gas gauge. We're going to have a very similar style gauge on the bike, and that's going to give you five different bars to kind of give you a feel for where your battery level is at. And you can, you know, really make sure you're not going to go out and get stranded without power. You know, though, you know, you never want to get stranded without power because, like I was saying earlier, you know, at their core, they really are just a standard bicycle. You still are going to be able to make your way back if you do, in fact, run out of power. It's just going to be a little bit heavier of a bike than you might be used to.
How much do these bikes weigh?
Yeah, so depending on the model, they're going to range from about 58 or so up to around 70 pounds. So we have some kind of more compact bikes and then some much larger kind of cargo bikes. So our bikes that are really meant for hauling multiple passengers, gear, kind of to really act as car replacements are going to be quite a bit more robust, but by design, you know, to really hold up the weight of passengers, cargo, things sure. like that.
Now, one of the questions I get often asked is how is the best way to carry them on a hitch, whether they yep. should be covered or not? I always have been telling people it's the same as any bicycle. Do you care if your bike gets exposed to the elements? Is there more we have to worry about because of the, I would assume most people would travel with the batteries off, but more we have to worry about with these various parts being exposed to the elements?
Yeah, so by the way, kind of love what you said there about, you know, you wouldn't want to necessarily leave a traditional bike out in the rain, and that's kind of the exact verbiage that, that we'll use, is you want to treat it like you would treat, you know, a standard pedal bike. So even though a normal pedal bike doesn't have any electrical components on it, you still don't really want to leave those out in the elements for a long period of time. So, you know, we're up here in often rainy Seattle and do a lot of our testing and riding here. So absolutely okay to get the bikes wet. But if you're planning on doing some longer term travel or the bikes are potentially going to be exposed to the elements for a longer period of time, often good to have the batteries inside with you, keeping them as close to room temperature for long periods of time as possible. Covering them can also be a great option as well, just to protect all of the even, you know, standard mechanical components from the rain, preventing rust and things like that. There's a lot of companies right now that actually make hitch racks that are specifically for electric bikes. The ones that are specifically for electric bikes are really just going to be a lot more robust and handle the extra weight. We've partnered with an amazing brand called Hollywood Racks, who makes make racks specifically for e-bikes. And I believe
that's what we have.
You have one of those.
Yep, that's what we have. We've liked it. Now, I hope I'm not, people always say, well, how do you cover it? You know, how much is the cover? Well, I went to Walmart and I bought a motorcycle cover for like $11, and it covers both bikes, you know. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be, and unless I'm doing something wrong, that's not a big factor other than the fact that when we put them away at night, we always cover them. And when we put them on the back of the RV, I often will cover them up as well. So
yeah, perfect.
I'm making sure I'm not missing it. If I'm not doing it right, let our people know.
No, it sounds yeah. like, sounds like you're a pro. You could probably, help us out a lot in our messaging.
Well, let's talk about how to choose an electric bike, because they yep. come in all different styles. You know, the city bike that you guys have, which is like a step through, is very comfortable. Different styles. How do people, and I would probably go back and say it's the same way you pick up a bicycle, you pick out a bicycle, you go sit on it and try it out. But that's a little harder to do with some electric bike manufacturers. So advice from you, Ty Collins, on how to choose the right electric bike for you, for the listener.
Yeah, definitely. So we as a company have always designed our bikes with very specific use cases in mind. So while, you know, the design aesthetic is very important to us, our bikes are really, really built for function and how people are going to use it. So when looking at our bikes, or really any bikes, what's most important is number one, figuring out, what am I, you know, purchasing this bike for? What use case am I looking to solve or use this for? And then also, what are my potential limitations? So if you have a hard time swinging your leg over a high step bike, a step through is going to be a really, really great option for you. About half of our models now are of a step through variety, meaning it's going to have kind of a swooping down tube that you can very easily take a step through. So for riders that potentially have mobility issues, injuries, surgeries, or maybe you're on kind of the shorter side of the height scale, step throughs are going to be a really, really amazing option. Once you've kind of determined what frame style you want or need, looking at what type of riding you're going to be doing. Are you going to be on paved streets? Are you going to be off-road? Are you going to be a hybrid of the two? So all of our tires are going to be a little bit larger than you would typically find on similar style bikes. just because we see a lot of added benefit for, you know, additional tire on the road. And because you have the motor, it's going to help, you know, help you fight that added rolling resistance. So some of our models have 4-inch wide fat tires that are amazing for kind of the more all-terrain riding. They can even go in snow, sand, things like that. Whereas some of our more commuter-focused models are going to have more standard kind of mountain bike-esque tires. You know, if a folding bike is really important, or, you know, maybe you don't know folding is important, but you know, I only have so much room to store this. I have to be really mindful of that. A model that does fold is going to take up a much smaller footprint than, kind of like a more full size bike that you might have to either store outside, put on a hitch rack versus, you know, fold and kind of stow, on your cargo bays. So question number one is always going to be, you know, how am I going to use this bike and why am I looking to get a bike? And then once you figure that out, making the decision is typically a lot easier than if you're just going into a blind looking at a bunch of different models.
Let's do one last question, and that has to do with the shipping and the assembly. I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, that's the problem about ordering by mail. You got to put it together. And how easy is an electric bike to put together when it comes in its box?
Yeah, so knowing that the vast majority of our customers are going to have the bike shipped to them versus buying it from one of our showroom locations, we really try to make it as easy as possible. So when a bike arrives, it's going to be about 85-90% assembled. All of the mechanical lines, all of the electrical lines, all of the components and everything is going to be pre-installed on the bike. So for the most part, all a customer is going to have to do when their bike arrives is take it out of the box. They'll need to screw the pedals onto the crank arms. They'll need to mount the handlebars on to the stem, and they'll need to put the front wheel on. So all in all, a very, very simple process. We have really detailed written and video instructions that you can follow along with. We also have partnerships with a number of nationwide bicycle service providers that can assist you with, you know, anything you might need throughout the process. And then we have a very large dedicated support team that works right here out of our headquarters that are here 7 days a week to answer any questions that people might have. So
I know that if I can do it, literally anybody can. And I put the second one together. The first one I had it delivered actually to a friend down in Florida where we happened to be. And then the second one I was actually able to put together. And it's that simple. That's simple. So, well, Ty, thank you so much for helping us understand a little bit what is involved with an electric bike. And even though Rad Power Bikes has been a longtime sponsor of the podcast, I think the information you presented is applicable to anybody that's choosing an e-bike. I said that was the last question, but I should also ask you, you have to be aware, I know from our podcast and just the general population with RVers, that these have become essential equipment on many an RV these days.
Oh, absolutely. It's really just an amazing tool for RVs for so many reasons. So there's the very practical kind of transportation aspect of maybe you can avoid on some trips bringing a tow car. Maybe you can supplement the number of car trips you have to use. And then as you brought up, the level of fun is just, you know, almost not even quantifiable, especially for people that maybe used to enjoy bikes, but for whatever reason haven't been able to ride. You know, for a variety of reasons, one of the more amazing things and one of my favorite things about the company is how many stories we've heard from people that, you know, hadn't been on a bike in 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, but had been able to get reintroduced into riding because of our bikes. And, you know, every single time I hear a story like that, it makes me smile because there is just such an amazing, simple joy about getting out and riding a bike.
There is. And I know when we now pick a place to boondock or a place to camp, the one of the key things we like to see is if there's a bike trail anywhere around.
Yep.
And that always helps us find a place. Ty Collins from Rad Power Bikes, you've been a great guest, and we'll see you out there on the road, eh?
Definitely. Thank you so much, Mike. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
All right. If you'd like to see a video of the bikes that Jennifer and I have and a little review we did on our Rad Power bikes, I'll put a link in the show notes for this episode. You can find it right underneath the transcript of the interview I just did with Ty. And the show notes are at rvlifestyle.com/265. The interview of the week is brought to you every week by sunshinestaterv.com in Gainesville, Florida, where every new motorhome can be delivered to the customer free anywhere in the continental U.S. Sunshine State RVs has hands down the largest selection of used small motorhomes in North America. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, you've heard me say that week after week. But do you know also they are a new dealer as well? They are a dealer of a whole bunch of brand new small RVs, like the Winnebago Travato, the Winnebago Era, the Coachman Beyond, American Patriot, the American Rev Group's Fleetwood IROC, and many, many others. They have a large selection of brand new, never driven before RVs. And of course, as we said before, and many times, the largest selection of used small motor homes that you'll find anywhere in North America. One of the things about Sunshine State RVs is they put all their motorhomes through a whole series of tests. They turn everything on. They make sure it works, you know, the way it's supposed to work. If you're buying a used Class B or a small motorhome, you can know that they've gone through a very thorough 172-point inspection of all the mechanical and manual systems. We've seen them when we've visited Sunshine State RVs. They even climb up on the roof and make sure the roof doesn't have any cracks. If it does, they replace any silicone caulking and fix it all up. Sunshine State RVs, they're worth calling no matter where you are. If you're shopping for an RV, go to sunshinestatervs.com, look at their inventory, and then call Nick at Sunshine State RVs and ask him for more information. sunshinestatervs.com. Be sure and tell him you heard about them on the RV podcast.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
And here's our regular Off the Beaten Path correspondents, Tom and Patty Burkett, somewhere in Texas.
Hi, Jennifer and Mike. Much of Texas, especially West Texas, came into the United States because it was rangeland, valuable to ranchers for the free grazing it offered their cattle. Even more surprising is the fact that after the Mexican-American War and the Civil War had ended, there were tens of thousands of steers just running wild on those tens of thousands of acres. Many's the man who spent his days gathering a herd and built himself a reputation and a fortune from those wandering beasts. Land there was in plenty, at least for a few decades. What there was not enough of was water. No rancher could keep and move a herd without access to a reliable source for watering his stock.
Rivers answered one of those needs, and some owners were lucky enough to have access to one that didn't periodically run dry. Those who could drilled wells and filled troughs from the aquifers deep below. But what happened when a herd had to be moved to a distant pasture or to a railhead for shipping to market? One resource unique to the region is called a tinaja. These unexpected and priceless pockets of water are formed when bedrock is eroded by an intermittent waterfall or by seepage and the freeze-thaw cycle. They're usually located in protected rocky areas, and trees quickly grow up to provide even more shade and reduce evaporation.
We first came across one of these in Big Bend National Park. The description of it says that this is one of three deep rock pools formed by seasonal water runoff and fed by a spring that opened after an earthquake in the early 1800s. Its walls are steep and smooth, so much so that animals attempting to drink regularly fall in and drown, their bones eventually sinking to the bottom. We'd read that it was possible to see the bones of a mountain lion below the deep clear water. We also read that Old Ore Road, the access to the site, was suitable only for high-clearance four-wheel drive vehicles. What the heck, we said. Let's give it a try.
Our 1997 road trek actually had no trouble with the road, if you discount the fact that 5 miles of washboard threatened to shake every single thing out of every single cabinet. Along the way, we passed the mysterious gravesite of Juan de Leon, where visitors often stop to leave a token of remembrance. Running at about 7 miles an hour, we did eventually reach the trailhead and gratefully climbed out for the half-mile trek to our destination. It was, as promised, deep and clear with nearly glass-smooth sides several feet high, and we agreed neither of us would be climbing out if we fell in.
As we said, this was our introduction to tanajas. Eventually, we learned that these were more often called tanks by the cowboys who used them. The most easily accessible ones we've come across are at Waco Tanks State Park. The three mountains contained in this 850-acre park shelter several tanks that provide water all year long. Evidence they've been used since antiquity is provided by pictographs and petroglyphs scattered around the area, some perhaps 10,000 years old. Early cattlemen and Texas Rangers carved their names here too, though that practice is now strictly forbidden.
The park, 30 miles north of El Paso, is a favorite for bouldering, and its rock faces draw climbers from across the continent. The year-round supply of water also makes it a fruitful area for bird watching, and rock yoga is offered regularly. A small museum, climbing shop, and full-service campground round out the amenities. Come take a look at these better-known examples, then try to find your own private watering hole out here off the beaten path.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Well, as we told you, the RV show schedule is winding down. Most will be done by the first week or so of November, and then it's a break until they start up again after the holidays in January. But there are three that I want to put on your schedule that are being held over the next couple of weeks. The first one is this coming weekend, which is October 24th through the 27th of 2019. And it's literally spitting distance from where we're recording this episode of the podcast in our condo. It's probably, as the crow flies, less than a mile away. And that is the Panhandle RV Show, held at the Emerald Coast Convention Center in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, right on Highway 98. And as I say, I could probably see it if I stood up and looked up the window on my tiptoes. We're going to try and stop by on Sunday just to say hello. We have no scheduled appearances anywhere. We're just going to go look around. How can you pass up an RV show when it's just a short little walk from where you're staying? So that's in Fort Walton Beach this coming Sunday, October 24th through the 27th. Sunday's when we're going to visit, but the show starts on Friday. Actually, starts Thursday night, I think, and it runs all day Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 24th through the 7th, the Panhandle RV Show, Emerald Coast Convention Center. Then October 25th to the 27th, this weekend in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, at the Oklahoma State Fair Park. It's the OKC Fall RV Show, the Oklahoma Fall RV Show this weekend. And then let's look ahead just another week or so, November 7th through the 10th, 2019, at Portland, Oregon. It's the Portland Metro Dealers RV Show, the Portland Metro Dealers RV Show. November 7th through the 10th. If you get a chance, visit an RV show near you. That's the best way to shop for an RV, to get ideas on what you can do with your RV, and to meet a lot of other people who have the same interests as you do. RV shows, they are a ball.
And that wraps up another episode of the RV Podcast with Mike and Jennifer Wendland.
New episodes are released every Wednesday, and the best way to stay connected is to subscribe to the RV Podcast.
We're in all the popular podcast apps, and you can also listen on the RVLifestyle.com travel blog.
Till next time, happy trails, fellow travelers. We'll be looking for you down the road.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for being a part of the podcast this week. Remember, we're here. We are, think of us as your guide to the freedom and the fun of RV travel. That's really what we're all about. Now, if you'd like to have your voice heard, be part of the podcast, you are invited to do so by leaving a voicemail message. Just call 586-372-6990. That's 586-372-6990. please subscribe to the podcast and let us know how we can serve you as you get out there and experience the RV lifestyle. On behalf of my wife, Jennifer, and our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland. Happy trails, everybody.